Radio Reverb. Brighton Festival 2018. Now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018 with Melissa Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melissa Dennett. This is Friday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, then repeated 10pm.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals. For the duration of Brighton Festival, we'll be looking behind the scenes, meeting some of the performers, creators and people who make it happen.
So today we're hearing about a funeral for someone who's fortunately very much still alive.
We're finding out how Miles Davis's classic albums are being reinterpreted.
Exploring the experience of being black and transgender.
Learning the secrets of writing for children and young people.
Along with reviews and previews in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We have an absolutely jam-packed show for you today, so we're going to go straight to our very first guest. Caravan is a series of performances that showcases a range of British performers, including Brighton's very own Victoria Melody. Ugly Chief is a dark comedy about organising your dad's funeral. Victoria, welcome to Radio Reverb.
Thank you for having me.
Firstly, go on then, put our minds at rest. Your dad and Mike is actually not dead.
Yeah, so, Dad is alive and he's in the show.
Wow, okay. So, although he wasn't dead, he thought he was going to be dead.
So he was diagnosed with a terminal illness. He was given around 5 years to live. And he asked me to organise his funeral. So I organised his funeral, and then after a year, because they thought he had motor neurons disease, basically, and after about a year, the doctors contacted him because he wasn't, he wasn't getting any worse.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we've misdiagnosed you. You are going to die one day, but not yet.
Wow.
And he does have a little bit of a problem. He can't lift his arm very well.
Yeah.
He's got a bit of a limp, but it's basically a trapped nerve in the neck, which is very different to a terminal illness.
Sure. So was it as much of a shock to him to realise that he was going to live as it was that he was going to die?
It was one of those things he lost a lot of weight. He get, you know, on purpose, you know, going on a diet, eating healthily. He gave up smoking. He gave up drinking. He started exercising for the first time. And so he actually felt the best he'd ever felt. So when he got the diagnosis, obviously it was a huge relief, but he'd never felt better.
Good.
So, basically, from something which, I mean, you've made this a comedy, so
yes.
I'm wondering whether your father thinks it's a comedy as well now, because it doesn't sound it. If I was told I'm going to die and then told, oops, sorry, made a mistake,
yes.
I'd see the comedy for others, but for the family.
Yes, so it's important to say that Dad is quite a character. He is...
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He is a antique dealer and he's been on television. He's been on shows like Dickinson's Real Deals and Secret Dealers, which sounds like a drug programme, but it's still about antiques. And I'm a performer and a comedian and I write and perform in theatre. So we're both show-offs, basically. And so the comedy comes from, because he's in the show, comes from that real daughter-father dynamic. And, you know, what actually happened was, one of the things I was saddest about was when he had his diagnosis, his terminal diagnosis, was I thought, we've never collaborated, you know, and we're both a pair of show-offs. Why haven't we, you know, made something together? So as soon as he was given the all clear, I said, do you want to collaborate and make a theatre show out of this?
Wow.
And he, yeah.
Every cloud has a silver lining.
So your dad actually performs on stage with you in this?
Yes, and he's not, although he does television, he's not a trained theatre performer or anything. He's an absolute loose cannon. Which is wonderful for the audience, painstaking for me.
By loose cannon, do you mean he can't learn lines? Is that?
I mean, he's learned the lines a bit. The script for the show is amazing. It's the best script that I've ever worked on. But, you know, you never get to hear that.
So who is the ugly chief of the title? Is it your dad?
So, yeah, Dad said... Because, you know, Dad's a big storyteller, and a dealer of his, an American dealer, said, "Oh, Mike, Melody's stories are great. You can believe half of what he says." And he said, he told me that Melody, which is our surname, he said it's Gaelic and it means ugly chief. And I thought that's the perfect title for the show. So I made the flyers and the posters and I sent them out. And then it turned out Melody doesn't mean ugly chief. Melody means tune. So, yeah.
Okay. Has this brought you and your dad closer together, or has it driven you apart?
Oh, I mean, it's brilliant to see, because we argue a bit and stuff, it's brilliant to see that on stage, but the process can be a bit annoying sometimes, because it's a dynamic change. It's a daughter telling a dad what to do, and he's stubborn, you know. So it hasn't always looked, you know, been that rosy in the rehearsal room. We've also got a live band on stage with us, a four-piece band, who sometimes act like our mum, you know, trying to be the diplomats in the room. But ultimately, it has brought us very, you know, it's been a very bonding, situation.
So having gone and already organised his funeral, which is now not happening, are you going to have it anyway?
Yeah, so the show, because we started working together and Dad wanted to make a show about Blackpool Football Club, but I don't like football. And then we were trying to work out, oh, what should we make the show about? And I said, Dad, I think we need to make the show about why you're sitting here today and why we're thinking about this collaboration. And that's because of your diagnosis. And I said, I tell you what, why don't I talk you through the funeral that I was going to put on for you? And so I talked him through it, and I told him the list of music that I had chosen, which is the list of music he gave me when I was only 7 years old. And then he denied that he'd ever given me that list of music, and he doesn't like any of that music anymore.
He didn't. This sounds like a real awkward squad.
Oh, he is awkward. He didn't like any of the funeral. So the show starts off with my funeral that he doesn't like, and then it goes into his funeral, which is absolute chaos.
So I guess this is a show which is for anybody who's got family, really, because I guess at the heart of it is an exploration of family relationships that don't always go smoothly.
Yeah, and it's you know, relationships aren't always beautiful, are they? And smooth. And
they're not in families.
No. And so, yeah, it's a very moving show. It's very funny, but it is moving, because we haven't always got on. And, ultimately, it's a show about mortality as well. It's a living eulogy.
Sure, lovely, lovely. Well, it's taking place. Ugly Chief is on Tuesday at 8 at the Old Market in Hove. It's part of the caravan programme, but it's sold out, is it?
It's sold out before it went on sale to the public.
Oh, crikey.
So it's sold out to all the members.
Right.
So for once, I'm doing a Brighton show where I'm not going to know anyone in the audience.
Yikes, okay. Well, what we always say to people on this programme is try and get some standby tickets, because quite often people do book them up very early and then things change in their life. But Victoria Melody, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb, and very good luck with Ugly Chief. Good luck with your dad.
Thanks.
Cheers.
You're listening to the Brighton Festival show here on Radio Reverb and on 97.2 FM DAB and online. Now, jazz musician Dave Okumu is coming to St George's Church on Saturday with an ensemble of musicians to reinterpret a couple of classic albums by Miles Davis. Mark Johnson from Radio Reverb's Slipstream spoke to Dave Okumu earlier on the phone to find out what's happening at these rather unusual events.
So on Saturday the 12th of May at 2 p.m. at St George's Church, the series Played Twice continues. This is presented by Brilliant Corners, and this time round features the great classic by Miles Davis, A Kind of Blue. I'd like to welcome Dave Okumu, who is heading up the band for this great presentation in the afternoon, and then also there's a gig in the evening where they'll be playing some of the compositions from Miles' 1970s albums. Dave, welcome.
Thank you. We're really excited to come down and play all this wonderful music. It's quite rare to have an opportunity to sort of look at the music from such an influential artist's catalogue over such a long period of time in one day in a beautiful church.
The sound is pretty amazing there. It's amazing to think that the album, Kind of Blue, is nearly 60 years old.
Unbelievable.
And when I listen to it now, it still sounds very, very contemporary and of the moment.
Yes, it's so strong. That fact alone is really quite something. It's not very often that happens.
So what drew you to get involved with this project? The idea is that you hear the album complete, and then after that you and other musicians get together and you improvise and play your own interpretation of that album?
Exactly, yeah. It's a really unusual format, and it basically was devised by these guys who run an establishment in East London called Brilliant Corners, and they started this night where they would kind of lock the audience into this room. You know, so there was this immediate sense of commitment from the audience. They'd play a classic record, jazz record, over their sound system. Everyone would listen to the record together, and then a band of great musicians would interpret the album just as you described. And the first time I went to one of these events, it was actually to perform, we interpreted an album by Bjork called Vespertine, which was a really interesting challenge, actually. And I'd never really had an experience like it. I can't really remember a time where I've listened through to an album in silence with a room full of people. You know, it's a very intimate, quite an intense and special experience. And then to try and rise to the challenge of offering an interpretation of that music and another way of looking at it and experiencing it and bringing it to life, and just going on that journey with those people was really extraordinary. And since that performance, that event, done a few more at Brilliant Corners, maybe three or four, and each time the experience has been incredibly rewarding. It's felt very, very special, I think, for audience and for the musicians. And in each instance, the musicians get together on the day and someone would have thought about arrangement, and there's a real kind of, well, at the times I've been in, there's been a real element of spontaneity. And something very special has always happened. So when the opportunity came up to explore taking Brilliant Corners play twice idea outside of their venue and bringing it somewhere else, we were all really interested in seeing if that would work. And the opportunity came up to do it at Brighton Festival in what sounds like a wonderful venue. I can't wait to see tomorrow kind of how it came.
It is a really unique thing these days, because obviously with the advent of playlists and iTunes and iPods, where, you know, the fact of listening to an album all the way through is quite unique these days, actually. So
it's becoming increasingly rare. I mean, I feel like, you know, even as a profound music lover myself, I feel that, you know, I almost rarely have the opportunity and am able to create the space for myself to listen to an album from start to finish. And so, yes, from that point of view as well, that it feels like a great thing to do. I really, really support these guys. I think they're onto something really wonderful, and, you know, I'd love them to take it all over the place so people can experience this
fantastic,
this unique experience.
So then in the evening, 8 o'clock, you're then back on stage to perform versions of some of the jazz fusion compositions from the 1970s, the Miles Davis catalogue, from albums like On the Corner, Dark Magus. The On the Corner album's very sort of dark and funky, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, I feel like a lot of that music has, it was interesting when I was discussing what material with Armit, who runs Brilliant Corners, and conceived of Played Twice, he was suggesting that we performing the 70s stuff in a church would be really, really amazing, because a lot of those recordings have a real atmosphere around them, and an almost kind of spooky quality, and that really, really appealed to me. Yeah, there's definitely, I think it's kind of all in there, the light and the dark, like all great art. It kind of, you know, represents everything at the same time, but there is definitely a dark atmosphere in some of that music for sure, and deeply funky. Yeah, that's a very appealing.
Pleasure talking to you. So, dear listener, that's tomorrow, Saturday the 12th of May, 2 o'clock at St George's Church for Played Twice, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. And then in the evening, Miles Davis Through the 70s, that's at 8 o'clock. Dave Kwamu, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was Mark Johnson talking to Dave Akumu about Play Twice and Electric Miles, both taking place at St George's Church in Kemp Town tomorrow, Saturday. And you can hear a longer interview Mark did with Dave on Slipstream here on Radio Reverb at 1pm on Saturday. You listen to Radio Reverb. This is the Brighton Festival special with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
So it has been a packed week at the festival so far, and I'm pleased to say that the Chief Executive, Andrew Conman, has taken time out to join us, literally dashing from a rehearsal to be here. What have your highlights been of a busy week so far?
I'm madly racking my brain to remember where we are in
who
the festival.
Who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, I think it's Friday.
So we're sort of day seven, aren't we? Goodness. So from the Children's Parade to, oh my God, Adam on Wednesday night, still at the Theatre Royal, which is such a magical piece, isn't it? It's you know, not a dry eye in the house after that trans choir online sings in the performance. Problem in Brighton, which really got the audience going last night, David Trigley's new piece. They've been amazing things so far. I've absolutely loved it, but we've got 2 weeks to go.
I know. I was down at the seafront with the pivot today, the seesaws, and volunteering
beautiful?
And helping. And honestly, it was smashing. There was adults from granny and her daughter, I'm guessing, and the grandpa and little lad on a seesaw, just going up and down, and the kid talking into the microphone and getting the answers back to just amazing, the smiles and the I interviewed the seesaw, actually. Melita, I don't know, I'm not here Monday. If you want to use me interviewing a seesaw.
Yeah, I shall, thank you, yeah.
Okay.
I was with a kid who sat there saying... this is really weird, into the seesaw, and the seesaw said back, well, you're talking to a seesaw, who's weird?
Genius.
It's just one of those surprise things that the festival throws up that is just such good fun to pop along and do, and free, one of the free things.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, fun is something that David Trigley is bringing to festival. I mean, like Life Model, another free thing you can pop in, do drawing. What do you actually think he's brought to the festival, aside from that fun element?
God, there's such a sort of wry take on life, isn't it? Isn't there, from David, a sardonic kind of humour, which is very British as well. So it's really interesting to have all of this international work then seen through a very British lens of Shrigley, and always slightly subversive, undercutting your expected take. So there's lots of absurdity running through. I mean, I think the fact that we had a Belgian rock balancer for 5 days balancing human-sized
yes.
rocks on the seafront is kind of the definition of absurd, really. But then how that becomes incredibly moving and contemplative. You know, there was a woman I spoke to who spent 5 hours on Monday watching those rocks being balanced and thinking about where she was in her life and what she was then going to do. You know, it was this moment of real contemplation and thoughtfulness that came out of something that is inherently ridiculous. And I love that about the festival. I think that's kind of almost a definition of it.
This year, there seems to be more LGBTQ content than in previous years. And people have quite often said, you know, oh, Brighton is such a queer town. Where's all the queer stuff in the festival? And I'm really impressed by the range and diversity of LGBTQ content this year.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Particularly from trans voices. Mm. I mean, that... you know, we've already spoken about Adam, but things like Brampton Abbey and Travis Alabanza.
We'll be hearing from Travis after we've
fantastic.
Spoken to you, yeah.
Fantastic. So... you know, really wonderful artists and incredibly powerful stories. That, you know, the thing that really made it so special from my point of view about Adam is that we have documentaries and political kind of treaties about trans, but rarely do we get to connect on a direct emotional level with another human being and their experience. And I think Adam does that so profoundly. And I'm really pleased that the festival can hold that this year.
And I think the common humanity in Adam was really what came out. And also,
totally.
Seeing how many young people there were in the theatre, I said when I reviewed it that I thought that was the youngest audience I've ever seen there. So, you know, connecting with different audiences as well.
Hope so.
I'm going to go on the commercial side of things because it seems that there are a lot of sell-out shows again. I mean, this weekend a lot. You've got the fringe getting bigger every year alongside you. How long can Brighton keep going with this May extravaganza of shows and the ticket sales?
And Great Escape.
And Great Escape and everything supporting itself financially.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think we have to be really mindful of that. There's a balance in it. Certainly within the festival itself, we're really aware of having to balance an economy. Ultimately, we want people to experience a lot of the festival and not just one or two headlines. So we try really hard to keep the tickets priced so that you can do more than just one thing. Really pleased that on average people do four or more events in the festival, and that feels...
And that doesn't take in them doing free events, presumably, because you don't know they've been and done that. Yeah.
But I think it means we do have to be really careful about the balance and talk a lot between ourselves, between the Great Escape, between the Fringe and the festival, and trying to think about how we pitch that best. It can't be an ever-increasing thing, but in some ways the geography of the city helps us. Even though it can be tricky to find places for things, it's also an automatic restriction on the scale of stuff. So you can't just expand forever and ever. And I think there's something probably healthy about that.
And if Southern Rail is helping as well, I would say the May Day bank holiday, I found it extraordinary that there was all that palaver getting up and down from London on the trains. When you've got festival opening, a bank holiday, it just strikes me that cannot help business.
It was pretty spectacular timing, wasn't it? Not helpful. We understand that work has to go on, but we'd love it if it was sensitively thought about.
In terms of the diversity of the festival as well, this year continues work that Kate Tempest did last year out in the communities in the sort of the greater Brighton and Hove area. I'm really pleased to see that work continuing.
It's fantastic, isn't it? But what's even more brilliant is that it was practically demanded by the people that we worked with last year.
Because Hangleton said, right, we're on again.
The steering committees in Hangleton and East Brighton would have had our lives if we didn't do it again. And that all of those people who give their time voluntarily to be part of the steering committee have been so committed and stayed with the project. So not just last year, but right through this year, has been amazing. And then I think to weekend after next, when we're in Hangleton for the first time, there will be some remarkable stuff going on.
Great. So pick of the weekend, please. What are you going to see tonight, first of all? You're not having a night off, are you?
No, tonight I'm at Lexicon I haven't managed to catch it since the very first rehearsal. So I'm back there tonight.
So that's No Fit State Circus. I went to see it last night.
Well,
very
done.
Good. Very good.
Very good. They're a fantastic company, aren't they, down on Hove Lawns. And then tomorrow night at various things during the day, and then tomorrow night at War Requiem, which is really one of the standout performances the Dome Concert Hall, and with an extraordinary array of soloists, Ian Bostridge, Gerald Finlay and Claire Booth, and that piece, Britain's War Requiem, which is just one of the great pieces of the 20th century.
And surprisingly, there are a handful of tickets still left, so there is limited availability to get
a
in.
A very few handful, but yeah. It's definitely worth giving it a go, because it will be a very special thing. And it probably packs more performers on the Dome stage than you have ever seen, and we have ever tried to fit, which is giving our producer a slight nightmare. But we've made it, and the rehearsal is going really, really well.
And the caravan event's taking place this weekend. We just had a chat with Victoria Melody. She's on Tuesday.
Oh, she's
but
fantastic.
She's amazing. A whole weekend of events of quite interesting and diverse nature, quite quirky, some of them.
Really interesting work. And right from right across England, sort of the best performance over the last couple of years on the small to medium scale. And, yeah, very quirky, mainly pitched because we're also selling to an international audience. So a range of about 60, 65 international delegates are coming from various other festivals around the world to look at that work. And so you have, if you get into some of the caravan work, you have an opportunity to see how the rest of the world will be viewing English performance, which I think is maybe an interesting way to look at the stuff.
It's the festivals looking at the festivals, seeing who's doing what when they're doing it.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to ask you, and you're live on air, and I want to see what... Do you know who's going to be programming, who's the director next year yet?
Yes.
Cheeky.
Yes. Okay. Is
that's
it
a cheeky question? I didn't know she was going to slip that in.
Oh, well, you know, he's here. I might as
well. You can try, Rebecca.
I know, I know. Well, I know people, and I never find out ahead. So I know I could probably do horrible things to parts of your body, and you still wouldn't tell me who was going to be director next year. But you're looking very happy about it.
Yeah, look, I think it will be great. But I love
about
that.
Her, him,
I think it will be great. And
She's trying.
What I love about the guest director is it's an opportunity to talk about the festival in a completely different way each time, and that is the challenge from my point of view to see what new direction can we take it in next year. So
in
we will be taking
though,
a new direction, I can tell you that.
Great, but that's the thing, is when is the downtime for this festival organisation? Because you've got the rush of this week, but at the same time, you've already got an eye on what other festivals are up to, what you're up to. It's never ending, isn't it?
Yeah, no downtime, but in a way that's a great thing. And we juggle it across the team. It's a fantastic team.
Well, Andrew Common, thank you very much for joining us on the Brighton Festival programme on Radio Reverb. Congratulations for a superb 2018 programme, because we've been looking at the programme, not terribly sure what's happening, and then we interview the performers, and it's like, wow, that's an absolute must-see, an absolute must-see. So I think a cracking good programme this year. Thanks very much for joining us on Radio Reverb. Good luck with 2019.
Great stuff. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Melita.
Cheers.
Now, we did touch on Saturday evening and Travis Alabanza. And Travis make their Brighton Festival debut with a festival commission called Before I Step Outside, You Love Me. Billed as an evening of black trans poetics with soundscapes, projections and animation, the show is for one night only at the Bright Helm Centre. Using the medium of Skype, I asked Travis just what treats will be on offer to the audience.
So what we've done for the Brighton Festival is that they thought in an opening artist as well. So we've got Sabira, who's like a local artist of Brighton, like a 15-minute opening act. And then I've also collaborated with Daniel Braithwaite-Shirley, who's doing some animation for the show. And we have a post-show discussion led by Chloe Fulani, who's a black trans activist.
Are all of the artists involved black trans artists?
Yes.
So how would you sell the show to the likes of me, white middle-aged, slightly older than middle-aged maybe, I don't know, depends what middle-age is these days, white lesbian, and other such non-black trans people. What's on offer?
I'd say that's exactly the selling point. I think that the point of art is to often see different perspectives. And sometimes I think in the culture at the moment where we are seeing all these things online, seeing all these things spoken about, sometimes art can be a really nice way into someone's world that feels more accessible, more creative, safer as such than the internet and these things. I love when I do my shows and I see an audience that doesn't always reflect me entirely, because it means that I'm being able to talk to people that maybe this is the first time they're meeting someone like me, the first time they're hearing these views. I think the show definitely isn't just defined to like black transness. It's talking about going outside, and I think that's something that so many of us, if not most of us, experience.
You're talking about the visuals as well, the visuals working with the vocal work.
Yeah, I've performed in Brighton quite a few times, and I was in the Fringe last year, and I've always kind of been at the Marlborough. People are used to that and seen that, and the festival contacted me this year and was like, we want to do something different, we want to lift it and make it something different to last time, when people love and are familiar with your work in the younger queer scene, but we want to bring something new. And I said, oh, I really want to play around with film, and I've been loving collaborating with someone that makes really amazing animation, and so a lot of the show will be kind of like theatrically lifted by a really big projection screen that I'm performing in front of. Sometimes the performance switches just to the film, so it's kind of like mixing between the two of like live performance and film.
It says in the festival programme of the piece, it's you exploring what it is to be harassed and stared at and surviving. And having just sort of watched a quick clip of you performing at the Tate, where you were talking within that about breaking gender binaries being a lonely move, how much does sadness go through your work?
Now I'm cringing at that video. That's like 2 years, 2.5 years old, or 3 years.
My lots apologies for no, the lack of recent research, so bring me up to date.
Lots has changed since then, and I think sadness is like natural. I think when someone exists in a body that's policed and harassed in lots of ways, sadness is always going to be present. But I think for me, in the way my practice has developed, is I'm looking for other ways to interestingly put across these points. So a lot of my show is actually, you know, there's 20 minutes of improvisation in the middle of my show where I talk about current topics, current affairs. It kind of sometimes has felt like a stand-up gig. where for me it's about showing joy and laughter in there too, and connecting with other trans and queer people in the room. Such a heightened time at the moment to be trans in the UK that if I was just to spend an hour plumbing this trauma and sadness, I think I would be exhausted, and I would probably think the other trans people in the room would be exhausted. I think a lot of this work, it is like sadness is at its root, but maybe anger is what comes through more, just wanting something better for us and our community.
And there's strength in anger rather than sadness being less proactive as a response, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, and I think sadness is real, but I think, you know, when I'm doing a show in front of hundreds of people, I've got to feel really safe in order to show sadness. And sometimes maybe anger is the easier route to go down to first. But yeah, I think sadness, there's lots of emotions in there.
Looking at the programme as a whole this year, there does appear to be quite a few representations of trans performers.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see it as, I think it's just a celebration. When I saw the lineup, I was like, this is so incredible to be not the only one. I think so often throughout my like previous working career, I'm always the only one on a lineup, or I'm always the first on a lineup. And it's so nice to see Brighton Festival be like, no, this isn't how we do programming. We want to give a range of voices, because I think that means that someone can go watch one of my shows and then watch another trans person's art and be like, wow, that was a completely different narrative. And then people have that hilarious moment when they realize that we're different people. You know, I think at the moment we watch one trans person's show and we think that that's the whole trans experience and we have to speak for everyone. And it's like, what's really refreshing about being on a lineup with so many of us is I can have the freedom of just speaking for myself. You know, this isn't a show about trans people. It's a show about me who happens to be trans.
What are you looking forward to most? Is it that interaction with the Brighton audience?
Yeah, I love being in Brighton. I love going to the beach after on the day. We've already scheduled in some beach time, the team. I've performed in Brighton for the last 3 years pretty regularly. It's always a really nice crowd. I'm really looking forward to that. I think the next day we're not going to get the train back to London until late in the evening. So maybe I'll go on one of the rides on the fair.
Well, enjoy your time in Brighton and good luck with Before I Step Outside, You Love Me, bracket, close bracket at the end there. And have a great time. And thanks for finding the time to talk to us on Reverb.
Thank you so much.
Travis Alabanza there talking about Before I Step Outside, You Love Me. It's at the Bright Helm Centre on Saturday at 7:30, and tickets are available from the Brighton Festival box office, and they may have those £10 standby tickets available.
The Brighton Festival 2018. Radio Reverb, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
And this is Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on the Radio Reverb Brighton Festival programme. And Adopt an Author is a Brighton Festival initiative that began back in 2003 and develops relationships between classes of school students and children's authors. It aims to promote literacy and encourage young people to write. Well, one of the adopted authors is Imogen White. She's author of The Rose Muddle Mysteries and joins us now. Welcome to Radio Reverb.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Smashing to have you. So tell me, let's cut to the chase. What happens when an author like you is adopted?
Well, it's a really lovely, lovely programme, this one, because it's often you go to schools and you get to meet them on sort of one-off where you're standing in front of an assembly of people. But when you'll get adopted by a school, you have this ongoing connection with them where you set them tasks and they do the work and then you get to feedback on their work. And so it creates a really nice kind of two-way conversation with the children. So it's lovely.
What kind of conversations are you having? What kind of questions do they ask you?
Well, the way that we've worked at this time, I'm with Cardiff Primary, and they've been absolutely incredible. And the head teacher there, Helen, she wanted me to really work with their writing. So lots of authors set them sort of things that they can decorate and make them look nice, but I went straight in with the writing. So we've set them all kinds of tasks, and the end result is they've got a book that they've created for themselves.
Wow. About,
with their own stories.
Is that all ages at the school, or what particular age group are you
They're working? Year five, so that would be kind of 10 to 11, I think. But they're a really, really creative, brilliant lot.
And what do you actually get out of it yourself? Because I would imagine that there are probably things that you learn about your practice, but also learn about writing for young people.
There is so much. I think you can never underestimate their imagination and their creativity, because you go in with certain kind of preconceptions and you'll read their work and you think, I wonder what they're going to do next week, because we've been doing a beginning, a middle and an end, so they've got a nice sort of end product that they can actually, where they're publishing their own book. And I always think, oh, I wonder if they're going to do this next week and wouldn't that be good? And then they'll suddenly just do something completely mad and brilliant and you think, you know, you just can't second guess it. Last week I had, it was a football based story that one of the boys had written, and it was all sort of based around a football match. And I was like thinking, okay. And then suddenly there was yellow goo coming from the sky, and he looked up and there was a UFO, but it wasn't any UFO. It was a Brighton and Hove Albion UFO.
Genius.
And that kind of genius is priceless. So yeah, I've just enjoyed the whole thing. They're smashing kids. They really are.
And you must get some really positive feedback then from teachers, because they must be delighted when they see that this has actually worked. So it has developed literacy. Presumably it's encouraged reading, certainly encouraged writing in your experience.
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to meet with Helen, because usually you meet them at the end of the project, and we have a party at the Dome, and I actually get to meet them. So I feel like I already know them because I've been looking at their work, but I actually get to meet them in person. But I have met Helen already, and the feedback that I've had has just been brilliant. And for an author, there's nothing nicer than hearing that you've managed to get children that didn't particularly enjoy writing and enjoying it and being enthusiastic about it. And obviously that's what it's all about. So yeah, what a pleasure for me to be involved in that and to see that. And I think there are resources actually on the Adopt an Author site from the work that I've been doing with them. And I think Helen's wanting to roll it out to other year groups because it's been such a success. So yeah, I'm hugely pleased about that.
We don't actually talk that often on the festival show about all the stuff that goes wrong around the writers and the interaction that's going on with young people about writing. Mm. And so how important do you think that is to the festival? Because it is one of the strands in there every year, but the sort of children's events sell out and we don't really look at them, but they seem to be quietly getting on with some sterling outreach work.
Yeah, well, like you, I wasn't familiar necessarily with all the things that are going on. You know, through my involvement with this project, I think there should just be a lot more of it going on, and, you know, getting to meet these children that quite often there's quite a lot of focus on the gifted and talented in schools, and just to be able to get out there and meet just a whole class of children of all different abilities and to be able to share in their experience of learning has been brilliant. And I think, yes, the more of that, the better, definitely.
What's the secret of writing successful literature for children? You're the author of the Rose Muddle Mysteries, yeah. Which I'll be honest, I haven't read.
Yeah,
but there is a secret, there is an art to writing for children.
Yeah, I don't think I would be so bold as to sort of claim that I know that, to be honest.
You've obviously got something right.
Yeah, well, my whole sort of writing started with local history round here, actually, in Brighton and Hove. And there's an amber cup in the Hove Museum. And it was through the discovery of this object that made me research lots about the local area. And through that discovery, I realised not many people knew about it. And so I decided to write a book about it. And that's where the Rose Muddle Mysteries sort of came from. So for me, it was a passion in something else that kind of drew it all together.
And writing for children and young people has come an awful long way since Enid Blyton, hasn't it? Which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Although I did used to quite enjoy that as well myself.
So did I. But, you know, when you pick it apart now, it's like, eek.
Oh, yeah, there's so many eek moments. Yeah, I mean, on the other...
The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, I had no idea what was going on there.
Yeah.
And now...
Yeah.
the Lion...
As well. You mean the whole kind of god thing.
I read it. I loved that series. Yeah. I had no idea that it was that Aslan was
a bit disappointed.
Yeah. No, well, there you go. But it just shows that children see things on completely different levels anyway. And if you're either sort of slapping things down so obviously that they'll reject it, or you're doing it so subtly they'll choose to see what they want to see in there, I guess.
I think there's been a real drive recently to be sort of show lots of different diversity in children's books. And I think, you know, the more the better, really, because that's what we want to see. And we want to see people with perhaps single parents being represented, but not in a way where that's the main part of the story. Maybe that it just becomes something that's normal and that we can just all just sort of get on with it and not sort of, you know, make such a hoo-ha about everything. It just becomes inclusive, and yeah, that would be good.
So Imogen, when is your big day with the youngsters, when they get to see this, the famous author they've adopted?
I'm so looking forward to it. And it's a week Monday, and it's at the Dome, and we're going to have a little tea party. And I'm going to do, hopefully, a fun performance with lots of fancy dress and quizzes. And then I get to actually meet them and discuss their stories with them in person. And as I say, I kind of know who they all are now, or getting there. So it's going to be brilliant to actually put the faces to the writing.
Are you a little nervous about this?
Do you know, Quite often, if I'm going to do a function or something, it's quite natural to have a little bit of nerves. But this one, I would say not at all, because I feel so confident that I'm going to love it, and that there's going to be such a good energy there that I'm not actually worried about this one at all.
Well, lovely to meet you, Imogen White, author of the Rose Muddle Mysteries and adopted author for this year's Brighton Festival. So thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb. Good luck with everything else.
Pleasure.
Cheers. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show. In a few minutes' time, we hopefully are going to be hearing from our reviewers who've been to see No Fit State Circus and also John Sermon. But first of all, Dublin folk act Lancome appear at St George's Church next Friday. That's the 18th of May. Here's a little taster of what to expect. I'm liking that rather a lot. That's Dublin folk act Lancome, and they're on at St George's Church. That's Friday next week. Don't go up there tonight because you won't see them. Friday next week, that's the 18th of May. You listen to Radio Reverb. This is the Brighton Festival special programme with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. And No Fit State Circus returned to Brighton this week with their show Lexicon. It takes as its starting point a tribute to 250 years of circus with a kind of loose narrative of a group of unruly circus trainees taking their first steps. Brighton photographer JJ Waller has been to see it. Hello, JJ. Welcome to Radio Reverb.
Hiya.
Was that your first experience of seeing No Fit State Circus?
I think it was. Although I might have come across them about 30 years ago when they started as a street act.
Oh, right. Okay, right. I think that probably most of the actors weren't even born 30 years ago in that.
Yeah. It was actually an exciting experience in the sense of there was a real buzz before the show. People queuing, knowing that it's sold out, which is phenomenal, that people are going after 250 years. Circus is still really strong. And so the expectations were very high, especially as I hear it was one of the Brighton Festival's sort of main shows.
Yeah, sure.
Loved it inside, loved the atmosphere, like the fact you could sit where you wanted to. And it was a nice, friendly start with the actors, etc. And then when the show started, it was a very elaborate sequence of school children at desks which flew in the air.
I love that bit where the desk floor.
Was near a highlight. It was quite a special image, which probably cost a fortune.
These are not spoilers, by the way, because when you see it, you'll appreciate it. And it's not spoiling it to say that's what happened.
Well, no, it was quite phenomenal. And I thought it was setting up a narrative. I thought it was setting up a story because you had a school teacher or a head teacher sort of berating these children. And then they went off into this fantasy. But it kind of never really went into a story. I was looking for it all the time. So that was a bit sort of jarring. And I enjoyed lots and lots of the acts, but I didn't have a great empathy for the way it was all linked together. It was very sort of like slapdash in the way that it was done. I mentioned just now that it was a Brighton Festival show, and I don't go to see a lot of the main festival shows, but if I compare it with something that I saw a couple of years ago, which was Spy Monkey, here you've got a show which is really at the top of its game. You've got a group of very, very experienced performers that worked as an ensemble, and they create something that was bewildering, mind-blowing, fantastic. But here, you just seem to see a younger, enthusiastic, sometimes very, very skill-based, fantastically so, like Diablo and the fire juggling, two very, very good routines. But sorry if it sounds a bit unfair, but I felt it was like these were the graduates at a circus school and this was their show at the end of term.
Okay.
But isn't... That's what circus is, isn't it? It's a series of individual pieces with the audience sort of wowed at the...
I think so. And the last circus show that I saw was, in fact, last summer, was Zippo. And the one that I saw before that was the Blackpool Tower Circus. So they're both very, very traditional circuses. But here you've got... What you're saying is very traditional. What this company seemed to do was to try to question that, change it, examine it, pressure, which I think is fine. Which is
kind of what they do as well, yeah.
But, the very last image was perhaps the most joyful, was all these fantastic bicycles coming, very, very weird machines. It was very, very upbeat. All the audience were clapping hands. And for the first time you felt like, hey, this is really happening and it's like being in a traditional circus. But why have you been messing with the format? Maybe sometimes you should leave it. Well, I'm not. I work with our chaos, you know, so I know that, you know, I go to a circus or I go to the theatre, I want to really be sort of, I want to be shocked or I want to be bewildered, I want to be amazed, I want to go out thinking, wow. And I didn't go out thinking, wow. I thought, music, costume. Some of these things were very, very flat, I think.
Hard to please. Come on, the unicyclist on a line of wine glasses. That was breathtaking.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was good.
Seriously. But then, you've got things like that huge black sheet that dropped down, and you felt, wow, this is really going to be interesting, because they're lighting it, and the shadows are going to be phenomenal. And it was pretty good, and then the rest of the cast came in, and you think, this is really going to take off now. Now we're really going to see why they've invested so much money in that.
JJ is going to take my place as the toughest person to please, because I'm normally the one that comes and goes.
I wanted to be kind, you know, but I've really can only give it like 3 stars out of 5. And I thought, hey, am I being really unfair? And before I came out, I looked online and I looked at The Guardian and I looked at other reviews. And they all gave it 3 stars, you know. So let's not pretend that this was the most incredible circus show. No, there's a lot of talent there, and these people will go a long way, you know. And the main thing, think about the response from the audience at the end. The audience really loved it, so I'm just being cynical.
Yes. You are. You know. Okay, well, JJ Waller, our cynical reviewer, No Fit State Circus. It is actually sold out, but as we always say, check on the Brighton Festival website for return tickets and on Twitter at Brighton. Fest, and you could just pitch up down at Hove Lawns and try your luck on the night. Thank you very much, JJ, for coming in.
Pleasure.
And I won't send you to see any circus in the future in that case. This is Radio Reverb Brighton Festival programme, and UK jazz legend John Sermon was on at St George's Church last night. Our reporter Jack Clarimont was there. We'll hear more from Jack in 2 ticks, but first of all, here's his report from the event.
Jack here, reporting from outside St George's Church in Kemp Town, where the brilliant John Sermon has just finished performing as part of the Brighton Festival. It was a beautiful gig in such an amazing location, truly, truly special. But let's hear what everyone else thought.
It was lovely. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was so wonderful to hear the two instruments play off against each other and talk to each other.
Absolutely.
It was lovely, and a lovely setting, and just a lovely vibe.
It was a really interesting part of the performance, which involved a recorder.
Brilliant.
That was terrific, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant, right?
I don't know how he made those noises.
Yes, how much of it was just him, and how much of it was help.
The electronics is really fascinating.
Amazing.
He's absolutely brilliant.
No, really lovely. Absolutely fabulous. Yes.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
So it's just a few of the voices there that went to see John Sermon at St George's Church last night. They were speaking to our reporter, Jack Clarimont. Jack, you were there, and you're going to give us a review. I'm wondering if it's going to be slightly more positive than JJ's analysis of the circus. How did you find John Sermon?
Well, maybe I'm just easier to please. But I really, really, really loved it last night. It was absolutely fantastic. When I was on earlier in the week, Melita told me how great that space was, St George's Church in Kemp Town. And it really was. It blew me away.
Were you downstairs or upstairs?
I went right to the top. I went right up kind of second floor, up in the heavens, so to speak, and with a central view looking straight down. The atmosphere was amazing. As the sun was setting, the lights made that church really, really just look fantastic. And the sound was absolutely incredible. And John brought a pianist with him. John Sermon lives in Oslo now, and he'd brought a pianist with him over from Norway. And they play together a lot, but not so much in the UK, I think he was saying, once or twice before. So it was quite special to see that. And the two of them played pieces of one another's and just worked together so well. It was kind of two split halves. And there were some classics John Sermon tracks, Gone to the Dogs, which is a really, really kind of well-known piece of his was quite something to actually be able to see it live. It was the first time I'd ever seen him, and it really was quite spectacular.
Wow, great. OK, well, we've got a positive review then. That's good.
I can't add, you know, that's fully positive, obviously.
Yeah, and everybody coming out of the space as well, as you heard there, they just absolutely loved it. I mean, there was one part where, you know, John Simon's well known for his saxophone. He's an absolute master on that instrument. And then he got a recorder out at one point, and I think everybody has that horrible noise of a recorder ingrained into the back of their mind from school.
Yeah. And everybody's parents had it as well.
Absolutely. And he, what the sounds he made with that recorder were quite spectacular. He uses that with a synthesizer, and it really ethereal, very spooky and odd. And he did a song with that called Druid Circle, which was kind of him going back to his days in Devon growing up, and it was, you know, really, really magical.
Wow. So yesterday on the programme, we had Charlotte Vincent from Vincent Dance Theatre came in as well, talking about Shutdown, which is the multi-screen installation looking at masculinity and all the kind of the trials and tribulations around masculinity. You popped into that as well.
Yeah, I went in to see that today, actually, popped in. And what a striking piece that is, too. I'm not very good at dance, but I don't often get to see dance or experience that. And obviously, that's the best thing about this festival, is going to kind of immerse yourself in different things that you don't normally do. And this piece is really, really stunning. As a young man myself, it was the themes that it goes through are really something quite poignant with young people today, and the idea of masculinity and this. The difference between a kind of a toxic masculinity and at the same time men who don't know how to communicate and can't communicate or feel a bit trapped and lost within a modern world.
And certainly the artist yesterday, remind me of...
Ebb and Flow, the spoken word.
And Charlotte. And
Charlotte Vincent, yeah.
Yeah, Charlotte herself was keen not to badge it as a dance piece because it's kind of multimedia, it's spoken word.
Absolutely, yeah. It kind of almost... In fact, even when I was going there, I thought, oh, an hour of dance. Am I going? But...
oh, Being as bad as the circus.
But like you say, yeah, there's spoken word. It's really funny at parts. It's really affecting other parts. You don't know whether to laugh or cry. It's dark. But yeah, the spoken word artist is fantastic throughout. And really, really interesting. The use of the six screens is really, really striking because... it's not just one kind of video stretched out over six. It all plays off of each other, and two screens on the opposite end of the rooms will link, and they'll kind of wormhole, and really, really clever the way that it's done. And it's just a really nice space to go and experience this amazing piece.
But it was obviously it's hard for... I went and saw it yesterday. I think Melita popped in there yesterday as well. That's for us as women, we're obviously not going to have the same response to the piece which addresses issues of masculinity and what is... Did you find it sort of moving, and did it speak to you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. It really did. I think it's this idea of what it is to be a male and a young male in this modern time, when you know the world is changing in for the better and in many different ways, and the kind of the role of the male and where masculinity fits within that is a really interesting topic to talk about at the moment. And I think it's something that is talked about a lot, but in the way that Charlotte did it and the team behind it, really differently, and made me think about things in a very different light.
Well, so Jack, you're going to be wandering off with your recorder this weekend on a mission for Radio Reverb down on the seafront with the Belonging, which is going to be taking place at the bandstand. Not entirely sure what's happening there. It's going to be some bands playing and some other stuff.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm going to be chatting to some of the people behind that, bringing that piece together. Don't know too much about it. Excited to find out.
Well, you know what? Belonging.
Belonging, yes,
on the seafront.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll find out next week on Radio Reverb on Monday when Jack will be back with his report for that. But thank you very much for joining us, Jack.
Thank you for having me.
And look forward to more of your reports around the festival.
Absolutely. So you've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, DAB and online, Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. during the festival, repeated 10 p.m. with a podcast to follow.
And thank you very much to today's guests. I hope I don't leave anybody off the list. We've had Victoria Melody, Travis Alabanza, Andrew Comben, Imogen White, Dave Okumu, JJ Waller, and reporters Mark Johnson and Jack Clarimont. Thank you very much for listening. I am back next Monday. Rebecca Sandals is gallivanting on Monday. She'll be with you on Tuesday.
I'll try and leave you that interview I did with the Seesaw to use on Monday.
Yes, please.
Thank you
very much. We'll have that. So thanks very much for your company. Have a brilliant weekend. Enjoy the Brighton Festival from me and Rebecca. See you soon. I'm going to play you out with Brighton's King Cassio and Keeps Me in My House. Bye.
It keeps me in my house.